Hey everyone, I'm Dan Sege.
And I'm Rebecca Schwartz, both from Hydro Ottawa.
And we'll be hosting the Think Energy podcast. So, are you looking to better understand the fast-changing world of energy? Every 2 weeks, Rebecca and I will be taking you on a tour and discuss some of the coolest trends, emerging technologies, and latest innovations within the energy sector.
We'll be engaging in great conversations with game changers, thought leaders, and industry leaders who welcome the opportunity to share their expertise and views with you, our listeners.
So stay tuned as we explore some traditional and some quirky facets of this industry.
This is the Think Energy Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back. This is the Think Energy Podcast, and I'm Dan Sege.
And I'm Rebecca Schwartz. In November 2020, the Government of Canada introduced a bill setting the stage to achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Dan, how old will you be in 2050?
I don't know, Rebecca. You'll have to ask me then when I wake up from my cryogenically frozen state along with Walt Disney. That's the plan.
Okay, good to know.
When you try and wrap your head around what it will take to get Canada to net zero by 2050, do you wonder what kind of energy transformation that will entail?
I'm still thinking about what you said about being cryogenically frozen. But yes, I think it's going to be a massive undertaking and a necessary one. Ontario currently produces 163 megatons of greenhouse gas emissions, and 76% of that is from emissions stemming from energy use.
Right. But when we talk about energy, we're not talking about electricity. We're talking about refined petroleum, primarily used for transportation, and natural gas to heat our homes and buildings.
That's right. Those two sectors, transportation and buildings, make up 76% of the province's greenhouse gas emissions. However, the electricity sector makes up only 16%. So here's today's big question. What are the keys to net zero success?
It's interesting because, as you know, despite what the electricity sector in Ontario has achieved in terms of renewable energy and curbing its greenhouse gas emissions, the conversation almost always still revolves around the electricity sector when it comes to climate change, which brings us to today's show.
Recently, the Ontario Energy Association released a white paper that reviewed various elements of the province's energy system and the options available to achieve zero emissions by 2050.
Our guest today is Vince Brescia, president of the Ontario Energy Association.
Vince, welcome to the show. Perhaps you can start us off by telling us a little bit about yourself and what the Ontario Energy Association does.
Thanks, Rebecca, and thanks for having me on the show. I'm the president and CEO of the Ontario Energy Association. I've been active in public policy work and research since the late 1980s, I guess, inside the government and in various capacities outside of the government. And I've been here at the OEA for the last 5 years and really enjoying it. In terms of who the OEA is, we represent the breadth of Ontario's energy industry. We have power producers of all the different fuel types, you know, whether that's nuclear, hydro, wind, solar, et cetera. We have demand response and storage. We have the large electricity distributors representing 75% of Ontario's customer base. We also have the natural gas distributors representing over 99% of Ontario's customers. In terms of what we do, the OEA conducts public policy research and advocates on behalf of its members. And we also provide forums for education on energy and environment issues. So that's a quick snapshot of me and the OEA.
Now, Vince, with respect to the Government of Canada's goal to reach net zero emissions by 2050, what is the role of the Ontario Energy Association in this initiative?
Thanks. Yeah, reaching net zero by 2050 will be a massive undertaking, perhaps the largest infrastructure project in our country's history. So our role at the OEA is going to be to leverage the expertise of our members and advise governments at all levels about how we can make this transition happen while still maintaining the affordability and reliability of our energy supply. It's going to be a big challenge, and we're all going to need to work together to achieve this goal.
So what kinds of major transformation will it take to achieve the government's goals?
I'll break it down in a couple of different ways. In Ontario, 76% of our emissions come from the energy we use. So reaching our goals will require a major transformation of our energy system. 23% of those emissions come from industrial processes and product use, 10% from agriculture, and 7% waste. So that gives you the full spectrum of the emissions in Ontario. But because we're an energy association, we've focused on the energy component and the transformation required in the energy system. However, there are some overlaps. For example, we're hopeful some of those waste emissions can be turned into energy, just as an example. So then turning to energy, currently in Ontario, 80% of the energy we use comes from fossil fuel sources. 48% is from petroleum, primarily for transportation uses. Another 28% is from natural gas, primarily to heat our homes and buildings. 16% comes from electricity, which is now a clean energy source. So altogether, achieving our goal is going to require us to transform 80% of our energy system. That's a big project. And the three big sources of emissions in Ontario are transportation, buildings, and industry. Altogether, those account for almost 80% of our emissions. So we're going to have to swap out the fuels that we use in transportation. We're going to need to decarbonize our building heating systems. And many of our industries and businesses are going to have to adapt to new fuel sources. This gives you a sense of the scale of the challenge, but also what comes with that is a large opportunity. So the two do go hand in hand.
2050 is 30 years away, but it's fair to say that Ontario's emissions have changed a lot in the past 30 years. Vince, can you give us a snapshot of how our energy use has changed since 1990? What sectors and provinces have improved the most?
In 2019, just to give you a sense of where we're at, Canada emitted 730 megatons of GHGs. Of that, Ontario represented 163 megatons, or 22% of the national total. Over time, since 1990, Ontario's emissions have declined from 180 megatons to 163, which is a reduction of about 17 megatons, or 9%. We still have another 19 megatons to go to meet our 2030 target of 30% below 2005 levels. That's not factoring in the recent national commitment by our Prime Minister to reduce emissions by 40 to 45% by 2030. In terms of, you asked about how the provinces have compared and fared nationally, Ontario has made the largest progress nationally. That came primarily from the elimination of coal-fired generation in the province. That one policy change resulted in a 31 megaton reduction in emissions from its peak in 2005. However, a lot of those emissions reductions in Ontario have been offset by increases in emissions from our transportation sector since 1990. Nationally, to give you a sense of how other provinces have done, to the east of Ontario, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and Quebec together have reduced emissions by 19 megatons in total since 2005. However, west of Ontario, the emissions profile has been rising. So altogether, nationally, our emissions have been flat since 2005. And if you look back to 1991, they're up from the 600 megatons to the 730 we're at now.
Vince, the Ontario Energy Association outlines 6 recommendations in the report. Can you walk us through what those are at a high level and why you believe they're the keys to net zero success?
I'll do a quick walkthrough. Our first recommendation is that we need to move as quickly as we can on transportation fuel switching. And that's because we have almost all of the technologies we need to affordably transform this sector, and because transportation is our largest source of emissions. So that's what we need to tackle first, and we can do it affordably. Second is we need to start reducing emissions in our natural gas system, which is our second largest source of emissions. And if we get time later, we can talk a bit about some of the things we can do in that area. The third thing we're going to need to do is to plan to expand our electricity system. All this fuel switching I've been talking about, like for example, in transportation, and we're going to need it in industry as well. We're going to need a lot more electricity, and we're going to need every type of resource. We're going to need nuclear, hydro, wind, solar, storage, demand response, transmission, you name it. We're going to need the whole package to meet the amount of electricity that's needed. Some people talk about a doubling or tripling of our electricity system. We're going to need a lot more electricity as we transform our economy. The fourth thing that we recommended is that we start to accelerate hydrogen programs and pilots. We're going to need a lot of hydrogen in our future because there's certain types of industrial processes and activities where it's not so easy to swap out the fossil fuels that we use. And hydrogen seems like a highly likely candidate, or hydrogen-based fuels. But we have a bit of work to do to develop those and make them affordable for customers. So we need governments to lean in and help with pilot projects and put their thumb on the scale, so to speak, to accelerate this economy and help build the infrastructure out that we need to service the economy. Fifth recommendation we made is that there be comprehensive energy planning, not just electricity policy. In Ontario, we have tended to have a history of focusing just on the electricity system. And you've heard me mention earlier, it currently only accounts for 16% of our total energy use. We now need to think about our whole energy system holistically and make a detailed plan about what it's going to cost and what the most likely pathways are. The final recommendation is that we're going to need federal, provincial, and municipal coordination. All three levels of government are active in this space. All are having an impact and can have an impact, but we're not going to be successful if they're not coordinating their efforts, or if they're working at cross purposes or fighting each other or turning issues into political wedges, against each other. We need to all work together because, as I mentioned earlier, this is a massive undertaking. And if we're going to be successful, we all need to work together in coordination. So that's a quick summary of our recommendations.
You note that in order for the transition to be successful in Ontario, careful attention needs to be paid to three core pillars that are the underpinning of the energy system. What are those?
Yeah, thanks for asking. We know from experience that there are three critical pillars that underpin public support for our energy system. The first is sustainability, which encompasses the net zero discussion we are having today. Our energy system must be sustainable over the long term, and that includes ensuring that we utilize energy in a way that ensures the environmental sustainability of our communities and of our planet, of course. The two other pillars, though, are affordability and reliability. We have recent experience in Ontario that significant increases in energy costs lead to very negative customer and voter reactions. We must keep our customers informed and supportive of the transition, or they will rebel against the effort. Finally, our modern economy is also very dependent upon reliable energy. Customers expect and depend on energy being available when they need it. If we go too long without energy to heat our homes or power to run our economy, or God forbid, keep our cell phones charged, it causes major disruption for all of us. So our transition must ensure we continue to provide energy in the reliable fashion that our consumers have grown accustomed to.
In your opinion, Vince, what are some of the biggest barriers and challenges to achieve the 2050 zero emission targets? For instance, are there any activities that we can't fully eliminate?
Yes. Some of the biggest barriers and challenges to achieving our goals will come from what some call the hard to abate sectors. These sectors are characterized by high material volumes, and finding alternative processes that are affordable is going to be a challenge for us. These are also some of our largest sources of emissions globally. And the big three are cement, steel, and chemicals. Cement is one of the largest sources of global emission. Each ton of cement produces about a half a ton of carbon dioxide. And this has two main components. One is from the chemical reaction of turning limestone, which is calcium carbonate, into lime, which releases CO2. The other is from the energy component that we use to cook the limestone to over 1,000 degrees Celsius, which is typically fossil fuels. So you have two elements. You have both an energy element and a chemical element that leads to large emissions from that sector. And that's going to be a challenge to decarbonize that sector. Steel is another one. Steel is the highest emitting industry in the world. It produces 3.5 gigatons of CO2 globally. like cement, there are both energy and process emissions. We make primary steel out of iron ore, which is iron oxide. We add coal to the iron ore for its heat energy to essentially boil the ore, kind of like we do for the cement, and for its chemical properties that allow us to strip off the oxygen atoms. This results in a chemical process where we end up with pure iron and CO2 emissions. We produce steel in Ontario, and we also produce a lot of cars, which use a lot of steel and steel and a lot of other processes. So Ontario is going to have to tackle this one head on, and it's going to be a challenge. And the third big challenging area is chemicals. Petrochemicals and plastic production are the other large area of emissions globally in Ontario. There's a more diverse range of products here, but the largest one is ammonia, which we use for fertilizer in agriculture. And the next are ethylene and propylene, which are the most important ingredients in plastics. Again, there's going to be some difficulties and challenges and a lot of technology required to decarbonize those sectors.
Let's talk about opportunities and leveraging technology and innovation. What's exciting you or giving you hope for the future?
There are some activities where we're going to need a lot of innovation and learning before we'll be able to eliminate emissions. According to the International Energy Agency, almost half the emissions cuts necessary for us to achieve net zero will come from technologies that are not in the marketplace yet. Some of the more exciting areas that are important and look like they have significant potential, I would say, are the following three: hydrogen and hydrogen-based fuels. Governments around the world are developing hydrogen strategies. It looks to be very competitive globally. Every major Western country is working on a hydrogen strategy. And Ontario and Canada have some leading companies in this area. Like we have Enbridge, Cummins, Hydrogenics, New Flyer, Ballard, Loop Energy, Planetary Hydrogen, Hydra Energy. It's going to be a very exciting area, is watching the hydrogen economy develop. That's one I'm excited about. The other one is energy storage. Particularly long duration energy storage. We store lots of energy now, we have the technology, the costs are coming down fast, but what's really going to help us transform our economy is the ability to store energy for long period of times and to learn to do that affordably. There's lots of people looking at that and working on it. It's going to be a significant growth area, and I'm very excited about it. The third big one is carbon capture, utilization, and storage. We are absolutely going to need carbon capture and storage if we're going to meet our net zero goals. One of the examples is cement, which I talked about earlier. I talked about this process where we boil the limestone and the chemical reaction leads to a bunch of emissions. The only thing I'm really hearing about from experts who know a lot more about this stuff than I do is that we're going to need carbon capture to capture the carbon dioxide that comes from that cement. And cement, you know, as I mentioned, it's a very large global emissions producer. And that's just one example. There are lots of places where we're going to need carbon capture in our future to meet our goals. So there's three areas that I'm excited about where I think we're going to see a lot of growth.
How important is energy affordability for Ontarians?
It's critically important. History has shown us that Ontarians react negatively to energy cost increase. If the government's transition plan has a significant negative impact on energy and affordability, families and businesses will rebel against the plan and the plan will get derailed. So it is critically important. We have to keep it in mind.
What lessons can be learned from when Ontario's electricity rates increase to pay for renewable investments? And how can these lessons be applied to Canada's goal for 2050?
It's a great question. I'll give you my perspective. I think one important lesson we can learn from that experience is that sudden large spikes in energy costs are very upsetting to people, and they draw lots of attention. They draw lots of political attention, lots of media attention. I think you can socialize the idea that costs may have to arise incrementally over time and get people used to the idea. However, most households don't pay much attention to public policy discussions and debates. They just look at their bill. They compare their last bill to this one, or this month's bill compared to this month last year to see how it's doing. So whatever plan we develop, if we can avoid sudden spikes, I think you can avoid the negative public reactions like the one we saw. And that's what we can learn from that previous experience.
Ontario's electricity system is one of the cleanest in the world. What does removing natural gas from the province's supply mean for the reliability of the grid?
It's a great question. It's one that's getting discussed more in the current climate. Ontario's natural gas plants were built only recently to replace the reliability service offered by the coal plants we were shutting down. Once we had the capabilities of these natural gas plants in place, we were able to add a large volume of renewables to our system, resulting in Ontario having one of the cleanest electricity systems in the world. These gas plants are like a backup to our electricity system. Most of the time, the plants are not utilized much while we power the system with, you know, nuclear, hydro, wind and solar, and other sources. That's why our system is so clean currently, because the plants are seldom run at full capacity, so we get few emissions from them. However, when we have a large spike in demand on a really cold day or a really hot day, these plants kick in to help maintain system reliability. They can be deployed on relatively short notice to meet urgent needs. Like the coal plants that they replace, these plants have access to something that is critically important for grid reliability, vast amounts of energy storage. This capability is not easy or affordable to replace, so we're going to need the services of these plants for some time before we're going to be able to replace them.
Can we replace natural gas to heat our homes and buildings? And what will it take to make it happen, Vince?
We are going to need to maintain our gas system to heat our homes and buildings for some time. We can change what goes into the system to make it cleaner, and we can reduce the amount of energy we need from the system. I'll try and put it into perspective for you. The natural gas system currently provides about 3 times the peak energy of our electricity system. In other words, we would need to quadruple our current electricity system to meet the current peak heat demand if we wanted to transition to electric heat across Ontario. To give you a sense of the scale of that, if we were going to replace all of the gas system with electricity, that would require about 24 nuclear generating stations. Or it would take 30 to 50,000 wind turbines paired with long duration energy storage, requiring about 1.3 million acres for siting. I think you get a sense that this would be a pretty massive undertaking and it would probably be very expensive for customers. At the same time, we are going to have to expand our electricity system to deal with significant electrification in transportation, which we've talked about, and in industry, which we've also talked about. So if we were to add the electrification of the natural gas system on top of that, that would likely not be achievable. So this informs the OEA's view that we should be looking at ways to decarbonize the natural gas system. And we're doing that now. Firstly, we've begun to blend renewable natural gas into our system, which takes methane from waste that would otherwise go into the atmosphere. Methane is a very potent greenhouse gas, making this a carbon negative activity. We're also blending green emissions-free hydrogen into our gas system. Going forward, we'll be continuously exploring technological advances that allow us to increase the amount of that blend of hydrogen and renewable natural gas into our system. In addition, if we were to pair our current heating system with heat pumps, we can make a significant reduction in the amount of natural gas needed to heat our homes and buildings. On top of all of that, you know, research has shown us that we can affordably achieve significant reductions in the amount of natural gas used through building energy efficiency measures. So when you put all of those things together, you know, our view is that we can deeply decarbonize the natural gas system and do that relatively affordably, which reduces the scale relatively affordably as well, and it reduces the scale of the electricity expansion that is going to be required in Ontario for all these other activities we've talked about.
As we note from your report, refined petroleum makes up 48% of Ontario's energy use, mostly for transportation. Are electric vehicles the answer to the transportation sector's greenhouse gas emissions problem here in Ontario?
Yes, they are a large part of the answer. Transportation, as we mentioned, it's Ontario's largest source of emissions. Passenger vehicles currently make up 57% of our transportation emissions. Electrification of these passenger vehicles and of smaller short-haul trucks and transit uses, this can be done affordably with current technology. It's very exciting. I expect this transition to really accelerate in the next while. For heavier and long-haul transportation, we may need other solutions to be part of the mix. Long-haul and heavy transportation is less amenable to electrification because the batteries get too big and heavy and refueling time, you know, adds significantly to cost. For these uses, you know, we could be looking at blending compressed natural gas and renewable natural gas to get to net zero. And most analysts seem to think that hydrogen fuel cells will be an important part of the long-term substitution for heavy transportation. The exciting part, as I've mentioned, is we have a number of leading hydrogen companies in Canada and Ontario that are making these fuel cells. So it's also an economic opportunity for our province. And also, you know, you think of the materials for batteries and some of the steel and inputs to these vehicles that we're talking about. There's another economic opportunity there for Ontario. For some other transportations like ships and planes, we're just going to need alternative fuels. You know, again, the batteries would be too heavy. You need a high energy density of the fuel. And we may be looking at variants on hydrogen fuels like ammonia that are very, very dense in energy in order to fuel those activities. And what we're going to need to try and figure out is a way to develop those supply chains affordably to sub out those uses.
All right, Vince, how about we close off with some rapid fire questions?
All right.
What is your favorite word?
Reason.
What is one thing you can't live without?
Air and Starbucks coffee.
What is something that challenges you?
Golf. I keep trying, but it keeps challenging me.
If you could have one superpower, Vince, what would it be?
Time travel.
If you could turn back time and talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell him?
Oh, with my new superpower, I'd say invest all your savings in Berkshire Hathaway and leave it there.
And lastly, what do you currently find most interesting in your sector?
You know what? I love the technological innovation that is taking place in our sector. I mean, we've been talking about it today. It's exciting. It's a very exciting time to be part of the sector. I'm learning every day about new technologies and processes, and I love it.
Well, Vince, we've reached the end of another episode of the Think Energy podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you had a lot of fun.
I did have a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
I sure hope you enjoyed this episode of Think Energy podcast. If so, please head over to iTunes and give us a review and subscribe.
And for show notes and bonus content, visit thinkenergy.ca. Also, be sure to tell your friends and colleagues about us.
Thank you for listening.